Mitchell Thornberry. No matter how palatial his home on the lakefront above Chicago, Mitchell Thornberry found himself reminiscing about his old digs at Trinity College. The friendly old ramshackle residences, the people on the campus and outside on the streets of Dublin, the pubs, the chat. Enough of that, he told himself. You're a wealthy man now. You've got to take the sour with the sweet. Looking around at his spacious bedroom, with the tall windows that gave a view of Lake Michigan sparkling in the moonlight, Thornberry chuckled softly to himself. The sour is pretty damn sweet, he thought. That it is. Alone in his 12-room house, except for the serving robots, he'd watched Jordan's program from beginning to end. The early minutes when they showed images from New Earth almost made Thornberry nostalgic for the alien world. But then Jordan had revealed that the World Council was keeping Aditi separated from him. Protective custody, indeed. Keeping a man's wife apart from him. Thornberry fumed over that, even while he stared aghast at the scenes of devastation that Jordan had shown. Once the program ended, Thornberry put through two phone calls. One to the chief of the American delegation to the World Council, and one to his friend and fellow star traveler, Jordan Kell. He didn't expect to have either call returned at this time of the night. Get yourself a good night's sleep, Mitchell, me boy, he told himself. Tomorrow you start working to help Jordan. He called for his butler robot to bring him a glass of Paddy's Irish whiskey, one of Ireland's many contributions to civilization, he thought, and a grand consolation in times of trouble. Wrestling with the World Council isn't going to be easy, he knew. Thornberry pulled off his clothes, then went to the bathroom, brushed his teeth and urinated, and finally settled himself in bed. As he reached for the glass that the butler had left on the bed table, the phone announced, Jordan Kell returning your call. Surprised, Thornberry commanded the phone to accept the call. Jordan appeared in the holographic viewer at the foot of the bed. Mitch, he said, his brows rising slightly, I should have waited until the morning. No, Thornberry replied. I'm glad you called. Jordan was also in a bedroom somewhere. Looked like a private home, expensive, elegant. He was sitting in an angular chair by a heavily draped window. How are you, Mitch? I'm grand. I saw your show. Impressive. Thank you. The World Council is keeping you separated from Aditi? I'm afraid so. That's criminal. What can I do to help? Jordan hesitated, then answered in a rush, You can get me nominated for a seat on the World Council. Aditi's breath gusted out of her when she stepped out into the open interior of Habitat Gandhi. With Castiglione leading her and Frankenheimer's little team of scientists, she had gone from the spacecraft that had carried them to the habitat into a sizable airlock chamber, and then through a series of offices and corridors. Officials checked the digital information about the new arrivals and politely ushered them through a set of scanners that quickly and efficiently probed their physical health. Satisfied that the newcomers did not pose any health hazards for the habitat, a dark-skinned young guide in a crisp tan uniform led them to still another doorway and, with a smile and a slight bow, said, Welcome to Habitat Gandhi. Aditi followed the young guide through the doorway and onto a path bedecked with 3-meter-high flowering shrubbery on either side. She could smell gardenias and jasmine in the air. It was like walking through a corridor of flowers. Castiglione explained with a smile, We are now inside the habitat, inside that big pipe we saw on our approach. The young guide immediately took over. The inner surface of the cylinder has been carefully landscaped. Most of it is devoted to farmlands, with towns and villages spaced among them. The people live in comfortable homes or apartments. Most of them work in the community in which they live unless they are retired. Even the retirees find many ways to occupy their time, however. They stepped past the shrubbery and into an open area. That's when the air gushed out of Aditi's lungs. A panorama of green countryside stretched before her startled eyes. Kilometer after kilometer of neatly squared farmland, with white-walled villages dotted here and there. In the distance she could see a larger community, a town with red-roofed buildings and slim towers rising above the ground. There was no horizon, The land curved up and up until Aditi was staring overhead at more green fields and villages hanging effortlessly above her. The young guide said, "Nearly a quarter of a million souls reside in this habitat. They live and work in this man-made world." "And they make babies," Castiglione added, almost sneering. Their guide's facial expression hardened. "It is very important to maintain our population at a sustainable level. Births are strictly controlled to balance deaths. We have no population boom here. We are not ignorant savages." "Of course," said Castiglione, in a more conciliatory tone. The guide led them to a trio of brightly colored minibuses parked next to the flowering hedges. Gesturing the six of them aboard the closest bus, he explained, "We will now go to the town in which you will live. It is not very far." Nick Matrenko stared at his laptop screen. He read the message again. "The Otero Network invites you to a news conference to be held in Boston, Massachusetts, to interview Mr. Jordan Kell, the Star Traveler. If you are interested in participating in the interview, please contact Douglas McKinley at..." Nick put the call through immediately. The next thing he did was to call Walt. Despite his disdain for worldly goods, Walt carried a phone wherever he went like ordinary people did. "In Boston, eh?" Walt asked. "I would have thought they'd do it in New York or maybe Barcelona."
"It'll be Boston," Nick replied, excited. "Live! I'll be in the same room with him."
Walt did not mention that it was a connection to the World Council bureaucracy that won Nick the invitation. Instead, he asked, "Can you bring anyone with you?" Nick was surprised at that. "Walt wants to see the Starman for himself," he guessed.
"Two, besides me."
Walt nodded happily. "Good. You'll bring Rachel, of course. And Didi."
"Didi?"
"And the little item she purloined from the police department's warehouse."